All right. My throat sounds yucky today. Yuckier than normal.
Okay, you're on.
Well, good morning, everyone. This is Julie Fedorchak with the North Dakota Public Service Commission. We are gathered on the 12th floor of the state capitol. It is Tuesday, April 5th, 10:30 a.m., for our regularly scheduled commission meeting at an unusual time. Day earlier and a half an hour later, but Dave Thompson is here and Alyssa, so they got the memo. All right. It's been a crazy couple of weeks with a long, really long wind hearing last week out in Dickinson. Got a lot of great public input. Three of us were in Fargo all weekend for political doings, and that was an exciting, busy time. And lots of discussion about energy policy, even at that convention. And Randy, we're sorry that you're not able to be with us here and are still sort of mourning and picking up the pieces from your dad's funeral yesterday and his big loss. We share in your sadness and know that we appreciate you being able to call in, and we're grateful that you're taking some time to take care of things for yourself and your family. So that's why Randy isn't in the office today. I don't have any other opening comments, and I'd be happy to kick it over to Commissioner Kalk and then Commissioner Christman by phone.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just the to follow through, Randy, I was really impressed yesterday when we were up there, and you had the horse there with your father's saddle. I'd never seen that before. That was amazing. When the horse whinnied at the very end, that was pretty cool. So thoughts are with you and your family. I want to thank my colleagues for adjusting the meeting time. I've got a robust travel schedule the next couple weeks with all the power line stuff, so I really appreciate adjusting the schedule so we could get it done, because there's some things we need to take up today. And last but certainly not least, I will be cheering for the University of North Dakota this weekend in the Frozen Four. And we're hopeful that they can bring back a championship. And Coach Berry, actually, I knew him back in the day, so I'm excited that I think he can do it this time.
So we can continue building on our lead against the Bison in national championships.
We're okay with that. I'm excited for you, Andy.
All right. Commissioner Christman, any opening thoughts?
Yes, I do. First of all, thanks, everybody, for your all your kind words and condolences and patience and allowing me to call in today instead of being there in person. It makes a nice opportunity to spend a little more time with family before everyone packs up and leaves. Secondly, I would just want to congratulate you, Madam Chair, on being endorsed again for another term of the Public Service Commission unanimously.
Well, thank you. Appreciate that. Look forward to working with you all after a successful election. Okay, we will move over to the agenda. We've got a number of items on consent, and I move passage of those items.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion is approved.
Thank you, Daryl. Okay, we have moving into the regular agenda. I do not have any items of my own today, so we'll go with Commissioner Christman, who has the first item on the regular agenda.
Okay, and hopefully the technology will allow me to bounce back and forth between motions and memos and keep this going. So first of all, RC1, I move the commission forward the nomination submitted by the Coteau Properties Company to the Federal Office of Surface Mining for consideration for the 2016 Excellence in Surface Coal Mining Reclamation Awards.
Second.
And I'm just waiting while email pops this up. The Coteau's nomination for this year's National Excellence in Reclamation Awards is for the completion of hydrologic reclamation projects during the years 2012 through 2015. Those included the removal and reclamation of 33 sedimentation ponds and constructing 11 stock ponds and 4 wetlands in the post-mining landscape within their permit area. This covers over 7,200 acres and is located in the northwest quadrant of the mine, immediately south of Lake Sakakawea. A variety of best management practices were installed by Coteau to achieve sediment control from pond removal sites. Those practices included installing silt fences, constructing shallow sedimentation sumps, the use of different types of erosion control blankets, mulching and mechanical crimping of the mulch, installing rock check dams and other flow barriers, and seeding with oats for rapid growing cover crop. These best management practices were used in various combinations at the numerous pond removal sites, and the successful completion of this list of reclamation projects was a significant reclamation achievement, while Coteau was also carrying out mining and other reclamation activities during the same period of time. This year, it should be pointed out, is the 30th anniversary of the National Excellence in Surface Coal Mining Reclamation Award Program that OSM established to recognize outstanding efforts to reclaim lands at active mines. Over the years, listen to this, North Dakota mining companies have received 15 of these national awards, including one that Falkirk Mining Company received when OSM initiated the program in 86. And it's 31 years. There was one year when OSM did not present the national award. But imagine that, 15 of those roughly 30 awards have gone to North Dakota mining companies. So certainly something to be proud of here.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I think it's a great project. I'm happy to support it. Jim, thanks for pulling this together and bringing it to us. And I want to set up a time to go up with one of our inspectors and take a peek at it.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion is approved.
Okay, RC2, I move the commission approve revision number 27 to surface coal mining permit number NAFK9503 held by the Falkirk Mining Company to identify the next five-year coal removal sub-areas and to update other information and mining and reclamation plans for the next five-year permit term.
Second.
Falkirk applied for this revision and renewal number 4, which will be the next motion, to this permit since mining will continue in the existing permit area for many years. The extended mine plan indicates the coal removal operations within this permit will continue until 2068. Yes, you heard that right, 2068, over 50 years from now. The revision application was considered a significant revision application and was subject to the public notice requirements. Falkirk has submitted the affidavits of publication of the newspaper notices. We notified the appropriate agencies, the affected landowners, and the advisory committee members. We received no objections to this revision application. However, we did receive a letter from one gentleman stating that Falkirk did not have a valid lease for a tract that he and other members of his family own within the permit area. The Reclamation Division determined that there is, in fact, though, a valid lease in the permit for the tract in question. And that information was conveyed to that gentleman in a letter dated March 8th of this year, and no further response was received from him. Evidence of adequate performance bond and liability insurance are currently on file. The surety, self bonds, and the collateral bonds totaling $88,700,000 cover this permit and two other permits at the Falkirk Mine. So the Reclamation Division has completed its review of this application and recommends its approval.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
RC3. I move the commission adopt renewal number 4 to surface coal mining permit number NAFK-9503 held by the Falkirk Mining Company to extend the permit term on the existing permit area for another 5 years until April 17, 2021.
Second.
Okay, so, you know, I mentioned that the next motion would pertain to kind of the same area. This permit covers all or portions of 55 sections of land in 7 townships in McLean County, covering 29,310 acres. Falkirk has submitted the affidavits of publication of the newspaper notice. We notified the appropriate agencies and the affected landowners and the advisory committee members. We received no objections to the application. I mentioned the surety bonds, the $88,700,000 that exists, and the Reclamation Division has completed the review of the renewal and recommends its approval.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, and the last on my portfolio, RC4, I move the commission approve BNI Coal Limited's request for a variance to the 10-year revegetation responsibility period for 2.4 acres of reclaimed hayland located in the southeast quarter of Section 25, Township 142 North, Range 84 West, in Oliver County, where revegetation was delayed because of a subsoil stockpile it was.
Second. Just a quick clarification, Randy. I think you said Township 142, and our motion says Township 42, just to make sure we've got the right one.
Oh.
Okay, so it is Township 142, Jim's telling us.
Okay. Thank you for
making sure we had
that clear.
Thanks, Randy. Sorry about that, interrupting you.
For whatever reason, my computer is not bringing up this memo, so I'm kind of winging it, and Jim can add if I miss anything. But basically, we have a policy memo on hand that allows the ability for us to do these kinds of exceptions in small acreage situations, such as with the stockpile. It finally came up now. In this case, the 2.4 acre variance request area is part of a larger reclaimed tract containing 16.9 acres in that same site, in the same area. And this was reseeded to hayland in 2009. The variance area covers about 14% of the reclaimed land in the tract. And I think that really covers. It's just this small tract that was kind of left out of the rest of it because of that stockpile. So the Reclamation Division has completed its review and recommends approval of the variance.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I have a question on this one, and if you can answer it, or Jim, Randy, but so the lands that were reclaimed in 81, 82, and 93, they're... Is their bond release being delayed by this subsoil stockpile being added to that section, or are we waiting bond release for them? Or it seems like that's a long time ago that those were reclaimed. I'm curious why bond release hasn't occurred.
I'm sure there's quite a few details involved to that. I'll let Jim answer it if you don't mind.
Very well.
Yeah, on this right around this area was a sedimentation pond. And most of the area had been reclaimed earlier on, but there was still the stockpile, and that was used when the pond was modified to become a more permanent pond. So there was this redisturbance, and this variance will allow final bond release sooner, since this work was done in 2009. They would otherwise have to wait until 2019, but it's the... There's other areas around this 19 acres that have been bond released, but where the
I get
16,
it.
The pond, but this allows the 2.4 acres to be treated as same as that remaining.
I see. So the variance, I get it now. The 10-year liability, we're waiving that right. And allowing it to be included in bond release from that whole section.
Yeah,
okay.
For that larger 15, 16-acre tract.
Excellent. Thank you for clarifying that.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Say, Randy, before we conclude your portfolio, do you give authority for someone on staff to sign on your behalf today?
Yeah, and either Charlene or, if she's not there, perhaps Esther could sign for them.
All righty. Thank you very much.
I assume I thought I heard Esther earlier, right?
Yes, Esther is here.
Okay, yeah, thank you.
Okay, very well. On to you, Mr. Koch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just Commissioner Crispin, I'm sure that Beth will have you watching the UND game on Thursday night, but I wanted to verify you've got the right connectivity up there at the ranch.
Oh, I expect I'll be back in Bismarck, and I wouldn't miss it.
All right. So just duly note, both your NDSU colleagues will be cheering for your school this weekend.
Excellent.
Fair enough. All righty. Item BK1. I move the commission adopt the consent order and Public Service Commission Turpentine Construction, Inc., Damage Prevention Enforcement Case, number PU15-283.
Second.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I actually have three consent orders on the agenda today. And this particular one, on June of last year, the Commission received a North Dakota one-call complaint from Bob Shell of Mid-Continent Communication, alleging a violation by Turpentine Construction that took place violating North Dakota Century Code. Turpin is a North Dakota corporation with its main office in Madoc, North Dakota. Mid-Continent, of course, is heavily involved in North Dakota with their main office, their principal office in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and their corporate office is down in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Commission advocacy staff conducted the investigation, and basically what they came up with is that Turpin personnel did not provide an excavation notice to North Dakota One Call Center at any time during the construction project. The company was performing a driveway replacement project on Elm Avenue in Harvey, North Dakota. The staff concluded that a communication cable belonging to Mid-Continent was damaged during the excavation, and the amount of the damage was approximately $300. There was no agreement. It was not made in time of emergency, and the company Turpin violated North Dakota law by not notifying the one-call system within 48 hours. Turpin signed the consent order agreeing to pay a $500 fine immediately, and also there's a $500 fine that's suspended. As long as they don't do anything wrong in the next 5 years, that'll be suspended, but if they would happen to have an additional violation, the suspended portion of this fine will be instituted, plus whatever may come from the next case. And talking with the advisory staff, I just kind of asked a question about all of these motions today have a fine with a part suspended. We've done that before with gas cases where it's kind of encourages where people that are first-time violators, I would say reduces the fine, it suspends it, but it also is kind of a little bit of a hook that's out there that really keeps them honest the next few years. And this is for a 5-year period, so I certainly support this, and I appreciate staff continuing to work with individuals to get the point across, to call before you dig, but also to move these cases along in a timely manner.
Mm-hmm. We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I'll just throw this out there now. We could talk about it later, too, but it relates really to all of these first-time violations and a conversation I had with the RECs this morning. And the question being from them are these that their criticism is our fines aren't high enough. And then I look at these fines for folks who are in the business and not making any effort to use the one-call system and call before they dig. We've talked about these fines before. I think that our normal one first violation was $1,000, and now we're looking at $500 with half of it suspended. I like the idea of the suspended violation, but I'm not convinced that $500 is enough for the severity of the violations in some of these cases. Sometimes they didn't hit anything. Sometimes they hit something more benign, like a fiber optic cable, and in one case, a gas line. So interested in my colleagues' thoughts on the level of these fines. I like the consent agreements. It moves the process along. But do you feel that the $500 is enough on a first-time violation of people in the construction business who aren't getting any locate tickets?
Well, if that's a question to me, Madam Chair, I absolutely do. Otherwise, I wouldn't have put it forward today with an agreement. I think it's we're sending staff, I guess I won't say conflicting signals, but we had a meeting with them and we asked them to move along these cases in a timely manner where they work with the company involved and they get a consent decree, they make a decision, and there's some accountability for the companies, and there's also the hook, if you will, for the next violation. But we also move these on to where the next step would be go to a full hearing. And so then if we go to a full hearing, we'll be spending much more state resources than are available. So I think that becomes a challenge. But I would say this, that in those cases where there has been fatalities, where there's major damages, I think that that's where appropriate that we use the max fines, which we have used those in the past. So I think these cases, I think, are appropriate. But I'm open to the discussion. I think it's just, what do we want? Do we want to move these along and put the message out there, or do we want to have hearings where – we may not get any better resolved because it is their first-time violation.
Well, and that's the question I have is whether it's moving them along is the result of the lower fines, or if staff is just off, you know, I don't know that a $1,000 fine was rejected by this company and they wouldn't accept it. So,
in my discussion, not directly with the advocacy staff, the advisory staff is, the advocacy staff always starts out with as big a hammer as they can. We've had cases where there's been consent orders put in front of us for $12,000, and we've had one of the commissioners vote against it because it was too much. So it's, I mean, I know that I believe that our advocacy staff really tries to get as much fine as they can before mm-hmm. they can go to a hearing. Because we had that case of $12,000 that they had a consent order.
Right. Well, and I do, I mean, in the scheme of things, moving these along is really important. I appreciate that. We just need to keep a steady eye on the deterrent factor of a heavy fine and the severity that these violations can cause. Some of them, they're just lucky that they haven't caused more damage. But it still just dumbfounds me that we have construction companies out there in this business that don't use the Call Before You Dig program. I cannot understand why they do that. And I think we need to double down on our efforts with the contractors to get more education out there to these folks about the importance of this program, the potential harm it will cause for their employees by not using this system, and the damage that it causes to the public as well in terms of loss of services provided by this underground infrastructure. So,
I don't disagree with what you just said, but I just want to throw in the other side that causes, I think, us not to get to be cautious that we don't go too far too. I know I've heard from some of the same people who, you know, they reference large construction companies with, you know, maybe crews working all over the state or all over several states, and emphasize that even a $25,000 fine doesn't really get their attention because they're large multi-million-dollar companies. But at the same time, all over North Dakota, but especially when you get outside of the four or five largest cities, people are clamoring to get contractors to do any work at all, where people's biggest problem isn't the price, it's just getting someone to do work. And in many cases, some of these, say, electrical contractors or people who do underground water sprinklers, are people with other full-time jobs who do it as kind of a hobby on the weekends. And if they're going to have the potential, when they do goof up and make a mistake, of a fine of thousands of dollars the first time it ever happens, they're just not going to do that hobby, and people just don't get any contractors. And so I don't know how you balance that in fairness and treating people equally between large companies who, correctly, you don't draw their attention with a fine of a few $100s, and small companies or individuals who are just going to get out of the business if they face those kinds of penalties, if they may do something wrong.
Well, I appreciate that it is a balance. I think that, though, you know, whether it's a big company or a small company, they need to be motivated to use the system. And when people aren't even calling for locate tickets, that is a real big problem. And you look at speeding, you go through a state where the fines are low, people don't care, and they keep speeding. You go to a state where the fines are high, people step on the brakes. So I think that we have to keep that in mind, and if we see continued, like in today's, we've got three cases of people just simply not calling for locates. If we don't see that turning the corner, then I'm going to be advocating for higher fines on first offenses in the future, whether it's a small or a large company. Everyone needs to follow the law, and this is a pretty simple, it's a simple law to follow, especially when it comes to just calling for the locates. There's other more complicated cases that I have a little, you know, that are not quite as black and white, but not calling for locates is not acceptable.
Well, to beat the dead horse a little more, I think that we just finished that working group with the PSC and all the different groups that are stakeholders in this, and one of the things they really got back is have appropriate fines. These cases today, the next one there was actually no damage. The other one there was no loss of lives. So I think it's appropriate to have the appropriate fine with the severity of the incident. So in cases where there'd be loss of life, major damages of tens of thousands of dollars, I think that's where we ramp that up to the fines, because we've heard for more than once that the legislature wants us to develop a matrix of how we do the fines. And even in that working group, they came out and said they wanted us to walk through the matrix. And if there's, you know, a major incident that takes place where a loss of life, I think you'll see us go immediately to potentially the max fine if there is guilt established. So I think it shouldn't necessarily be more. It should be appropriate to the damage they caused. And one of the things that came out in that working group was, our violation sets the stage where if the companies want to go after them in a different venue, that's where they do it. In the case where the Avena, where the individual was killed, you know, we did a max fine in that case, and then the company, the individual's family was killed, they went through the civil process and went at it that way. So our decision really sets the stage for further litigation, because when we do fine them, it goes to the general fund. It doesn't go to the company that has the loss. So, but I'm open to the discussion, I mean, because I've been – you're singing my song, Commissioner, since January of 2009, been on this.
Right. Well, and I think it just comes down to, you know, the potential for damage. Now, there's sure. One gas line hit here. That could have been a lost life.
Absolutely.
And in our goal is to prevent this stuff from happening. And to the extent that we have fines that are deterrent, that helps us get to that goal. So, I I'm going to support these, but I think we need to really keep an eye on whether the fines are doing any good for deterring people from ignoring the requirements of the one-call system, and how else we can get at these companies who are just failing to use it and just ignoring the requirements to get the locates.
Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, motion is approved.
All right, thank you, Daryl. Item BK2, I move the commission adopt the consent order in Public Service Commission Guthmiller Earthmoving Incorporated Damage Prevention Enforcement Case Number GS15-714.
Second.
Second.
In November of last year, the commission received a North Dakota one-call complaint from Montana Dakota Utilities alleging a violation by Guthmiller Earthmoving, a North Dakota Century Code – well, let me back up here – alleging a violation of Guthmiller Earthmoving with a violated North Dakota Century Code. Guthmiller Earthmoving is based out of Medina, North Dakota, and, of course, MDU is a corporation right here in North Dakota. Staff reviewed the alleged violation and determined that the company, while performing parking lot upgrades on 4000 Highway 281 southeast of Jamestown, North Dakota, that at no time the excavator called in the one-call notice. There was damage of, very seriously, a 3/4-inch natural gas line. The amount of the damage was approximately $661, and one customer lost service for approximately 20 hours. The no agreement between the Guthmiller and MDU not made during time of emergency, and staff determined that the 48 hours notice was not called in. And this also is a consent order with $750 fine plus $750 suspended, so a total of $1,500, with the suspension of the $750 being for a 5-year period. So Very similar to the last one, but in this case a different area, different company. Initial fine was $1,500 vice $1,000, and I'm guessing because of the hit to the natural gas line.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion is approved.
Madam Chair, do you mind if I just do BK4 now?
Sure.
Since that's also a consent order? So item BK4. I move the Commission adopt the consent order in Public Service Commission's JDM Schmidt Concrete Damage Prevention Enforcement, case number PU15-681.
Second.
Second.
Thank you. In September of last year, the Commission received a North Dakota one-call complaint from Ottertail Power alleging a violation of JDM Schmidt Concrete of the North Dakota Century Code dealing with one-call notice system. JDM is a sole proprietorship with its main offices in Towner, North Dakota. And Ottertail, of course, is a major company in central and eastern North Dakota and western Minnesota. Based on the investigation, staff determined that in August of last year, JDM personnel began an excavation to find North Dakota Century Code while performing concrete installation in Drake, North Dakota. JDM failed to provide an excavation notice. Fortunately, no facilities were damaged during this excavation, but there was no agreement between JDM and Ottertail. It was not being made at a time of emergency, and the company JDM did not utilize the North Dakota one-call system. So staff in this case is recommending a $500 fine of $250 payable immediately, with $250 suspended for the five-year period, as long as they don't have any more violations.
We have a motion, a second, and a further discussion. Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
And, Madam Chair, if you want to schedule something, we could put that on scheduling because I'm happy to talk about that so staff gets guidance what we're looking at. So, finally, item BK3. I move the Commission deem the application complete pending receipt of final turbine locations 30 days prior to the hearing. Initiate a notice of filing and public hearing in Oliver Wind 3, LLC Oliver 3 Wind Energy Center, Oliver and Morton Counties, siting application, case number PU16123, in Oliver Wind 3, LLC 230 KV Transmission Line, Oliver and Morton Counties, siting application PU16122.
Second.
Second.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We'll be setting the public hearing for the wind farm as well as the public hearing for the power line during scheduling. We're looking at the first part to the mid part of June, but we'll get that to scheduling. A little background. Oliver Wind filed an application for certificate of site compatibility concerning the location of 100-megawatt Oliver Wind 3 consisting of up to 280 wind turbines and associated facilities in Morton and Oliver counties, as shown on the attached map. The all but one turbine is currently planned to be in Morton County. The estimated cost of the wind farm is approximately $153 million. Oliver 3 LLC also filed an application for a certificate of corridor compatibility and a route permit concerning the location of approximately 9.5 miles of 230 kV electric transmission lines and associated facilities, as shown in the attached map. The estimated cost of the transmission line is $11.4 million. One thing that I have not had a chance to talk through this with my colleagues, but it's often times where we don't have the final turbine locations when we deem the application complete, and we have a work session that we have scheduled that has slid a little bit because of lots of different reasons that we talked about when an application is actually complete, because we've had a lot of discussion about that. In reviewing of this case over the last couple of days, I asked that they put in pending receipt of final turbine locations 30 days prior to the hearing, initiate a final notice of filing a public hearing. I would say that's a major policy shift for the Commission. We've talked about having 10 days prior, but I'm certainly open to the discussion, but I think that we need to have these final turbine locations at least 30 days so the public can get a good look at them, so they can see what their concerns might be, because given the heightened concern around our region about where these turbines are located, you know, each wind farm is a little bit different. If they're a community wind like Rolette, it may not be as important to have the final turbine locations because all the people are involved in it, as we've seen in some of our other cases where there's a patchwork of people in the middle that are not directly involved. I think having those turbine locations public 30 days before the hearing is very appropriate. But if either of you would like to talk more about this, I'm certainly open to holding it over for discussion. But I wanted to give the full background, and I just that's kind of where I'm at today.
I do have a question if you're done with your presentation.
Yes, sir.
I don't know if I don't feel a desire to hold it over, but if when we say pending submission of turbine locations, I have not looked at this application intentionally because I knew we had that big hearing that the chairman mentioned earlier in the meeting out in Dickinson last week, and frankly, I didn't want to start confusing different aspects of the two, and so I've been kind of holding off on looking through this one. But staff certainly knows now some of the things that one or more of us are looking for, or that people who come and testify are looking for, and that ends up bogging us down. So I would hope that when we say pending final turbine locations, that also means maps that show the footprint of the wind farm and which are the participating land, which are participating landowners' properties as opposed to those who aren't participating, where the residences are and things like that. And I don't mean a 20,000-acre map on a half a sheet of paper. It's got to be something that is big enough that a person can look at it and understand it and that it makes it useful.
Well, I'm certainly open to hold this over and discuss it more, but that's why I wanted to fully discuss it and see where you two are at, because we do need to get these things scheduled, but we're not in any particular hurry to make sure if the application is not what we want. We've certainly learned that we want to make sure all the information is there before we schedule the hearing and make sure the public has all the information they need to present their concerns.
I'm really fine with it. You know, at Dickinson the other day, when we asked for it, they were able to get much of that information put together that afternoon and evening. And so they certainly can do it. We just need to make sure that they do it in advance.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is a great step and support the 30 days. I would ask additionally that we make an effort to make those maps more available on our website, more obviously, because I've heard from people over and over at these hearings that they show up at the hearing, it's the first time they're seeing the maps, and so I'll say, well, they're available on our website, but they kind of glaze over and think, really, how am I going to find that? And so somehow I think we need to work with Steve and Stacy to have an upcoming events section or something that links right to, and these maps are available in a pretty direct manner on our website for folks to access, and then we should include that in our news release when we're submitting that out in advance of the hearing, promoting the fact that where the hearing is and the location and that the maps are available at our site so they can find them easy, because this is a big piece of their consideration. So that's one thing. And the second thing is I'm assuming that since you're just saying final receipt of the turbine locations and previous applications, we've had other stuff pending, environmental studies or wetland studies or cultural studies that haven't been filed yet. So I'm assuming that those are all already filed and that we're not waiting for any of those as well.
Well, that's the level of detail I can't give you off the top of my head. But I think some of those, I would say that, for example, the Schiphol letter of concurrence, for me personally on the cases,
no, not that,
that's an example of something that I'm open to along the process. But that's where I think our work session we've got scheduled about what is it that we want to have before we deem the application complete is very important. But I know for me, I think the turbine locations, everything's critical, but this is like almost the biggest thing for affected landowners. They want to know where these turbines are at. They're not as concerned about the other stuff. They're really concerned about the turbines.
They are, but the environmental pieces, in the past, we have required them to have that, and we have have included language in the order or the motion for the hearing requiring them to file them, 10 days or 15 days ahead of time. That was one of the key pieces in this most recent hearing that got delayed. They said they didn't have enough time, and we gave them the delay, we extended it. So
why don't we do this, Madam Chair? Why don't I withdraw this motion and let Sarah go back and review it very quickly? And if it's not in the application that we have, we'll add it to this motion. And if it is in there, then we'll just vote on this motion.
Okay, that works for me. You mean to suspend it and talk about it in admin?
Yes, and then we can schedule the hearing too.
Move it to admin. So do we move it to admin now, or do I just do that as chair? Okay, Daryl, let's move this to admin.
All right, move this to admin.
And then, Sarah, can you go scare up that information of the chair's question?
Okay.
It was on whether we have the study.
No.
Just environmental studies and the cultural studies, not the SHPO concurrence, but the at least that they've got the studies and have filed them.
So it's simple. If they haven't put them in there, then put it in the motion.
That they have to get those in. Look at some past motions. Jerry has some that can show you what we've said has to be included, and let's just be consistent with that at a minimum until we go through and have a more definitive list of what we're going to deem complete in the future. But for now, we should at least stick with what we've deemed complete in the past. Okay, very well. So we'll save that one for admin.
And that concludes my portfolio.
All right. That concludes the regular agenda. I wanted to go through the upcoming schedule a little bit. So this Thursday we have our semi-annual telephone conference with PHMSA, and an agenda of items we'll be talking about with PHMSA and their work in North Dakota. We have on the 19th a pipeline hearing, and the end of the month a hearing with Otter Tail Power on their renewable resource cost adjustment factor on rates, our first hearing since Randy and I have been on the commission with Otter Tail, a first formal hearing.
Madam Chair, if I could have Esther add the Lignite Council. We usually, the three of us, wander down there at some point in time, and that's also in that April 20th to 21st time, so could we notice
Lignite
that
Energy
after?
Council. We should notice that, and we should also probably notice the Bakken conference, because I think we'll probably all be heading down for that.
Sure.
That's later, but that's in May, right?
Right.
I can get those dates, Esther, just real quick. Come on now. May 24th. 25th and 26th. All right. Okay, that concludes our regular agenda. Do we have any questions?
Yes, for clarification, you said 100 megawatts for the wind farm, 280 turbines?
48. Max of 100, 100 megawatts and up to 48 wind turbines.
Okay.
So I'm guessing like the 2.1s or something is what we'll probably see.
So since this is Oliver Wind, if this is built, how big is the whole complex then? Do you know?
I do not know off the top of my head, Dave. It's got to be more than 300 megawatts, though. Okay. We can find that out pretty quick.
And for the surface mining excellence for Katoa, I assume that's Freedom Mine?
Yep.
Is that Freedom Mine?
Correct, yeah.
Okay.
That's right. Alyssa?
Oliver 1 and 2, are they already up and running?
They are.
And where are they located, near here? Or
I think just to the south. I'll have to double check the maps. We can get that for you pretty quick, Alyssa.
Isn't Oliver 1 and 2 the ones over by Center?
Center, right.
And this would be just to the northwest of that truck stop out west of Mandan. So they're kind of on different sides of Oliver County.
This one is on the south part of Oliver Wind, right? It would extend from the south and then go into Morton County as well.
And they're really not adjacent. I think that those others are about 10 miles away from this one. In fact, most of these are in Morton County.
Mm-hmm.
Randy is correct.
And who actually do they have a buyer?
I'm not aware of a buyer, Dave. I don't know if anybody else is.
I haven't read the application yet to know whether there's a power purchase agreement or not. They have an interconnect, obviously, because of the transmission line. So I would suspect they have a purchaser, but I haven't read the application yet. We can peek in it. If you come back to my office, we can peek at the application and find out. Anything else?
Good.
Okay, very well. Then the that concludes the regular portion of the agenda today. We will.
I can go right into it if you want to keep Randy on.
Okay, Randy. Yeah, that's a good idea. Then we don't have to break to sign. We'll do that after we're done. We'll go straight. Okay, we're going to stop and start the recording, but we'll go straight into the admin portion of the agenda, Randy.